Catherine Russell Rich was pushing past 40, a cancer survivor, increasingly unfulfilled by her longtime career in magazine journalism, and had in fact just lost her most recent job. So what to do about all that? What else would one do but move to India to study Hindi? Her new book, Dreaming in Hindi, Coming Awake in Another Language, details her adventures as a student of this complex and beautiful language, but also what it means to undertake another language. Catherine Russell Rich joins us now. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, glad to be here. Thank you.
Just to give people a taste of what they're in for, I'll just start with the first paragraph. I'll read it.
Okay.
One time in India, I appeared half naked in a temple, just up and flashed the worshippers. This was not something I'd been planning to do. I surprised myself on Lord God Shiva's birthday. Surprised the celebrants, too, I'd say. They hadn't been expecting it either. Now, not to let people think that we're trying to trick them into reading soft porn, why don't you just finish the story? What happened here?
This was when I had been there a long time, and I was out in the country and by myself on a weekend, and I was always pestering poor Indians to speak Hindi with me to practice and get to know people. And a man asked me if I'd like to attend a Shiva worship for the Lord God Shiva's birthday. And we were outside this ancient temple, and he went in and he asked the Brahmin priest if it would be all right. And the guy came out and he looked at me and he said, "All right, it's fine, but you can't wear jeans. You have to put on a sari." And he brought out this folded white cloth. And I didn't want to say I had never had any luck tying saris. I could not wrap a sari to save my life. I had to get an Indian woman anywhere to do it for me. But I really wanted to see the worship. And so I said, "All right." And he led me inside through the inner sanctum past like six or seven celebrants in the dusky light, and they're looking, and I go back and I do my best, and I think I'm looking pretty rakish. Kind of like
appropriate to the occasion.
I thought I was looking fine for the birthday celebration, and I came out and the whole thing came unraveled in front of everybody.
Oh dear. But it was a good effort.
I know.
But the point is, you probably would not have been included in this kind of intimate event, right, if you had not been making the effort to learn language. You think that's fair to say?
Exactly.
Had you not connected through the language?
Exactly.
Wouldn't it have happened.
I kind of figured out why I was doing it as I went along. I didn't even know, and I ended up over there. And one of the reasons I found in retrospect was it gave me all kinds of entrees to be able to speak Hindi with people. It's still not that common for Westerners to do.
The book is filled with all kinds of interesting nuggets of wisdom where you find yourself saying, "Gee, I hadn't thought about that." And one of the nuggets that struck me is that you notice that there has actually been a boom in foreign language learning. Some of that is due to immigration patterns, but you also say that some of this is due to people going through life changes.
Maybe it's that this sense of coming awake in another language, coming into another place, gives you a sense that you're starting over in a clean and powerful way, maybe.
I think that people may intrinsically understand this once they think about it, but you also talk about what it means to master a second language. You write, "To learn a second language, you have to be willing to give yourself up, the self encoded in your first one. You are no longer a person who speaks with facility and authority. You are less than what you were as a child. You cannot transact a phone call without help, discuss matters more complex than the color of fruits and vegetables. You cannot signal who you are."
Oh, yeah. I think I wasn't prepared for that going into it. But when I got to India, nothing about me translated at all. I mean, through language or otherwise. I was in a really conservative part of India, and not all India is like this, but I was in an area where a substantial number of the women were still in Pardha. I lived with a woman who was in such strict Pardha, she was not allowed to go off her floor. She couldn't come up to my floor. And Pardha means literally curtained. And women didn't, they didn't work there. I had one friend who had a job. So it wasn't just that I couldn't speak the language. It was that the concepts I came over with didn't translate into Hindi. And there were all these words that just don't exist in Hindi. So it was more like things were being erased. Like there's no verb to own. Mm. You can't own anything in Hindi. New shoes are only in your direction. Hmm. You know, and yeah, you feel really stupid because you sound like you're like three. But also, there's just a lot of words you can no longer say in the new language. And that goes for every language.
But you know, so you also write that part of the problem is you can't make jokes because nobody understands your your humor. Now, that sounds like for you, that seems like that would have been a real challenge. But not, what was it like to go a whole year without anybody laughing at your jokes? That
well,
sounds
they
terrible.
After a while, I got the hang a little bit of Hindi jokes. But even when I made a successful joke, if you are doing it with a thick accent, they don't get that it's a joke. Like when you say, no more food for me, you say, mere pet bargia, my stomach is full. And one day I realized that the way you say die is margia. So I thought that was, it's not the greatest joke I ever made, but I said one day, nini mere pet margia, my stomach has died. And they just thought I wasn't understanding how to say bargia, and then I had to explain the joke, and then they went, oh, ho, 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 ho. You know, so if you have to explain a joke, it doesn't, it kind of detracts.
If you're just joining us, I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Catherine Russell Rich, author of the new book, Dreaming in Hindi, Coming Awake in Another Language. It raises the point of how intimately language connects to culture, and that really learning a language helps you unpack the culture. But this is a challenge in many ways. I mean, obviously, there are things that you will find appealing as part of a culture, but there are things that you will not. Can you give an example of that? Something that was kind of unpacked for you that you would not have experienced had you not been studying the language?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this sounds minor, but there were so many things I hadn't realized were so culturally ingrained in me, like saying thank you. In India, you don't say thank you, but not very often. And it's not because people are being rude. It's because, how do I explain this? There's a word dharm, and dharm means your spiritual responsibility. So every time I tried to thank a waiter, he would say, no, that's my dharm to do this. It's just, it's not part of the culture. You do the things that you're supposed to do out of spiritual responsibility. And so I knew this intellectually, but when I would go away and I would bring back a present for someone and they would just take it and look at it and put it in their purse and not say thank you, I mean, that it's very small, but I would feel like, oh, they're so rude. And then I would have to think, no, you're not from here. And then also every time I messed up, which you do a lot in a new place, there was no way to say excuse me, because there's no word for really excuse me in Hindi.
Really, why not?
I don't know. I was just asking my tutor that, and she said, we just don't say excuse me.
But so that explains a lot, doesn't it, about why people come to another place, particularly people who come to the U.S., and then people are in conflict with them there and don't necessarily understand why. And
yes.
A lot of it's rooted in language difference that doesn't translate, literally does not translate.
Does not translate. I got to India on September 6, 2001, and 5 days later, you know, the World Trade Center was attacked. So I was there for 9/11 and the aftermath. And, you know, getting a perspective on 9/11 from a place that distant the way I did, I saw how we looked from over there. It was very different than people were seeing here. I was so aware of those differences because of that. America started looking worse and worse and worse in ways that I don't think people understood.
Well, but one of the things that was opened up to you because of your language study was some very raw and what I think many of us would consider bigoted attitudes toward Muslims. Would you talk a little bit about that?
I was in an area, the party called the BJP was in power, and they're Hindu extremists, a lot of them. And so my teachers at the school where I attended, they were BJP, and they didn't like Muslims, you know? And I began to feel like I was going to school with the Ku Klux Klan. The area was like that, and I knew I was coming into a very old sectarian conflict, and I had to keep it in mind that 500,000 people had died during partition in 47. So a lot of the people who hated Muslims, they were hating them because they'd had people killed in sectarian conflicts. So there were these old hatreds that I kept trotting on. Mm. It's really hard to be in a place like that and figure out how do you put yourself in this and not begin to hate everybody reflexively because they're hating a whole group.
I don't want to ruin the mystery for anyone, but did you ever wind up dreaming in Hindi.
That's all I wanted to do was dream in Hindi. But often when I dreamed in Hindi, it was just like real life where I couldn't understand anything they were saying. And then when I came back, every so often I have a dream. It's so funny. It's like I'm so in longing for India that I have a dream that's partly in Hindi and partly in English.
What do you think your takeaway was?
The takeaway, I got over there and this whole amazing life opened up to me because I was in a graduate program and they would make us go out in the street and talk to people in Hindi and they would say, ask them what their favorite Bollywood actor is. And I was just in this completely other life, raga concerts, villas, people's villas. And it was amazing. And it just suddenly dawned on me, I could have done this my whole life. I could have done this at any point. You know, I got in a graduate program, which meant I had a fellowship stipend paying my bills. I rented out my apartment back in New York. I think I came away with the idea, if you want to have an expanded life, you can do that at any time. Nobody's stopping you.
Catherine Russell Rich is the author of Dreaming in Hindi, Coming Awake in Another Language. Her book is out in bookstores now, and she was kind enough to join us from our New York bureau. To read an excerpt from her book, click on the Tell Me More page at thenewnpr.org, where you can read a transcript of this interview and all of our interviews, in fact. Catherine Russell Rich, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more tomorrow.